Hey, welcome back to the Infest Podcast. This is Brian.
I'm Daryl.
And this week, Daryl, we are talking Oscars. We are talking Picard. And we are talking Lock and Key.
Come on now.
You're bad.
That's real bad.
All right. First things first, though. 2020 Oscars have come and gone. It was not without a little bit of controversy.
As always.
It was not without some surprises. Big surprises. I don't want to go through the whole list. I kind of want to talk about a few things. The first thing is Parasite. Did you see Parasite? Did you watch it yet?
I have not watched that yet.
Okay. So, Bong Joon-ho is the director. I think I said that right. He directed The Host, which I think you've seen, and Snowpiercer, which is...
I love Snowpiercer.
top 20 movie. So Parasite won a bunch of big awards. It won for Best Director. It won Best Picture. It won Best Foreign Film. And I believe,
Best Screenplay, I believe.
Yeah, Best Original, or Best Adapt... No, Best Original Screenplay.
So the one thing I have, and this is one of those topics of discussion, because, you know, I don't follow Oscars. I've never followed the award show. I always look at the winners just to see who won and everything like that. But sure. To be nominated for Best Foreign Film and Best Film, like, I don't know if that should be, you should be nominated for both. I don't even
Why
know.
Why not?
And I'll get a base, kind of a sports analogy in there in a minute. I don't know if you should have two different ones or you should put them together, because good film is good film.
Hey, Ric Flair is in the WWE Hall of Fame as Ric Flair and with Four Horsemen.
Yeah. So
right there. And again,
I understand that we were talking earlier before we started about sports. Talking about sports a little bit later. But the idea in baseball, for example, and again, yes, I know this is a little bit different.
Yeah.
But the idea is that pitchers have a Cy Young Award, but sometimes pitchers get nominated for MVP as well.
Right.
Should that be the case?
Yeah, if you're the best pitcher in the game, you win the Cy Young. If you're the best pitcher and you happen to be the best player in the league, you win the MVP.
However, this is the thing. And this is why it's a little different. But
what's with the identity politics? One person can't beat other things, Daryl?
And for baseball, this is why it's different.
Right.
It's because as a pitcher at maximum, you're gonna affect 35 games.
I mean,
as a regular position player, you're gonna affect 140 games.
But like, so let's look at football. Mm-hmm. You could be the rookie of the year and the MVP.
That's true.
This is what happened.
And that's actually probably a better comparison right there. But my whole thought process is, and again, this is from a guy who really doesn't care about the Oscars,
right,
is just for conversation's sake, is there going to be a time where we're not going to have Best Foreign Film or Best Picture, and we're
no,
just going to?
I don't
have
think
best
we
picture.
Ever will, because like if we don't have Best Foreign Language Film, then there's a lot of movies that are going to go unrecognized, and the nomination itself is a huge boost for most movies, for most movies that get nominated.
Has this never
happened?
Okay,
never
okay.
won. Never has a foreign, a non English speaking film won Best Picture. So
okay.
Precedent has been set. I unfortunately did not get a chance to see it. It's been still like $20 on iTunes, and I don't even remember being in theaters around here.
I don't remember ever seeing it in theaters.
You know, it's definitely, I'm going to check it out here soon. But it was up against 1917, which most people thought was going to win, the Sam Mendes Moore movie, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, Ford versus Ferrari, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So they do up to 10 now for Best Picture.
Right.
I think if this was a top five list like it used to be, because it used to just be the top five films, Ford versus Ferrari is not on there. I'm going to guess Jojo Rabbit's probably not on there just because it's weird.
Right.
The Irishman stays on there because of, you know, it's Scorsese. 1917 is total Oscar bait. The Joker was total Oscar bait. Little Women and then Marriage Story, I think, rounded out. Or Marriage Story pops off because they're not going to do two Netflix films out of five. But I'm just curious, does Parasite, if it's not a 10 picture max, does Parasite get this nomination? And if it's not nominated, you know, obviously it can't win, But if it was even pared down to five, would mm-hmm. people have given it that fair shot?
I'm actually not sure they would. And
I'm really happy a horror movie got an Oscar, by the way.
And again, to your point, Brian, that this is a movie that, regardless of, you know, what I'm about to say next, I'm going to go see. I'm going to see because a couple critics that I listen to, that there's a handful of critics I listen to online, 2-3 at the most, and they've had nothing but good things to say about this movie. So I'm going to check it out.
Right.
The other thing, and again, you know, if it wasn't, the subject matter wasn't what it was about, basically class warfare
right.
almost, would it be on there either?
Hey, the Joker is about class warfare.
Joker is about class, and the Joker's on there, which will, Joker's another, you want to talk about that real quick? Just my thoughts on Joker
is,
as far as Oscar.
Yeah, so when it comes to the acting roles, I like to think if I can picture someone else playing that role, I don't think they should be able to.
And I think that I told you that's actually a really good way of looking at it.
And I said on my review, I thought Jake Gyllenhaal would have been as good, if not better. I think Billy Crudup could have played the role as good. I, you know, lately, as I've been thinking about it and I've been watching clips and stuff like that, like, I think Jude Law would have been a pretty good version of this Joker with the manic nature and mm-hmm. kind of that weird face that he makes on the young Pope and that sort of thing. Because the young Pope is kind of a sociopath.
I know you said that about Brad Pitt, too.
Yeah. Like, I can't see anybody else in that role. I can't see anybody else in Leonardo DiCaprio's role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't think this was his best acting, though. Mm-hmm. I felt like Adam Driver in Marriage Story did the best of anyone I saw in this role. And like Jonathan Pryce and Antonio Banderas, I just tracked down clips to see. So, you know, things aren't necessarily in context. But when you look at the best actress and things like that, Renee Zellweger as Judy, like, you don't even recognize her as Renee Zellweger. That mm-hmm. is Judy Garland. You know, so you have to look at that. Like, is this a transformative role? Mm-hmm. Is this, you know, and a lot of people are like, yeah, it was for Joaquin Phoenix. And if you think that, that's great. Like, I'm not going to argue with you and say you're wrong or I'm right. This is all subjective.
Right.
But for me, I just felt like this is a role, like, when in Clay Pigeons, which was an independent film he did really early on with Vince Vaughn in his career, he was kind of a manic-y serial killer type person. And so there wasn't, I didn't feel like this was a stretch. When he played Commodus in Gladiator,
right?
Nobody else could have played Commodus the way he did.
Just amazing. Enough.
And like I was talking to a friend earlier, kind of about this same topic, and you look at Jack Gleason as Joffrey.
Yes.
He's never going to be anything else. And you can never picture anyone else playing that role. So, like, people hated Joaquin Phoenix because of Commodus. They didn't hate Joaquin Phoenix as a person.
Right.
But, like, it affected how people thought about him
just
because he is so good. And he is an amazing actor. And I do not take anything away. Her is fantastic. He plays a role where he's in love with his phone. And it's believable and it's heartbreaking and it's awesome. And
yeah, that was a movie I finally got to see middle of last year. And that was a really good movie. And he's a phenomenal actor. And I thought he was phenomenal in Joker. To your point, as far as about the transformative,
sure.
I haven't seen enough of the other ones mm-hmm. of the other movies to definitively say, at least subjectively say, I guess you would say, if he deserved it or not. I thought he was phenomenal in the Joker. And obviously, to me, he was the best part of it. I mean, the movie itself, I liked the movie more than you did.
Yeah.
But I did think it was overrated.
So a couple notable, like, snubs, if you will. Star Wars did not win for any of the effects awards that they were nominated for. Star Wars did win. I'm sorry.
Endgame.
Did not win for any of the effects things that were nominated for. And this is the first top grossing film of the year.
It didn't do that.
That did not win an Oscar, which is really, it's really interesting how they're looking at the films that are nominated, what they're nominated for, and what the Academy is voting on. I think as the voters get younger, I don't think we'll ever see that again, where the top film doesn't get anything. But as far as this being a down box office year, I feel like there were a lot of really strong movies that came out this year.
Yeah, there just, were some,
you know.
You know, one of my favorite movies that, and again, this came out in, I think it came out in February. February or March was, did you see Alita yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was, and again, it had its problems. It's one of those movies that you'll look at and you'll be like, oh, yeah, it definitely has problems. But Rosa Salazar, to me, was, and again, speaking of Rosa Salazar, there's that show, I don't know if you've seen that, Undone on Amazon Prime.
Nope.
It was one of those shows that came out of the blue. It's only like 25-minute long episodes.
Oh, cool.
8 episodes. And it's done in that funky, I don't know the actual technical term for it, but it's in that animation like a Scanner Darkly.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I haven't seen that. It's actually on my to-watch list, but yeah.
But that's one of those movies, again, Aaliyah's one of those movies that she makes that movie for me. She's like one of my, she's one of my favorite characters of any character in any movie I've seen all year. And that, you know, my bromance with Captain America and everything that, so. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's, was Anna, did Anna come out this year or was that the year before?
I want to say Anna was at the very beginning of the year. Anna was a fun movie.
That was a fun movie.
It was very much in the vein of Atomic Blonde, Peppermint, John Wick, you know, those sort of things. You know, yeah, the other like kind of thing that was interesting, like, you know, in the we're talking about like first and things like that. Taika Waititi won for best adapted screenplay for Jojo Rabbit.
I still want to see that movie.
Yeah, and he's they made a big deal because they said he was the first indigenous person to win an Oscar because he's part Maori and part Jewish, you know, born in Australia, so Aboriginal. Which I thought was kind of a weird thing to focus on, right? Because you think indigenous and you think Native American Indian sort of thing. And so I just thought it was really weird, and I wanted to point that out. The other big snub is Luke Perry wasn't in the In Memoriam.
How do they not have him in there?
And he was in the movie that was nominated for Best Picture this year. Just saying. And he was nominated, and they couldn't show a scene from him in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. When he pushes Pee Wee Herman out of the way, he says, remember what happened? You know, you don't want to mess with me. Remember what happened last time, Lefty? You know, so. That being said, the Oscars have come and gone. Award season has thankfully come to an end.
Good riddance.
It's time to move on. But it was just, there were some really just kind of strange happenings that, that went on with this year's Oscars. And it was worth talking about.
Now, I might have watched it if they had Ricky Gervais as the host.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Up next is, let's talk about Picard.
Picard.
Star Trek Picard.
So you're all caught up.
Yeah. I mean, the new episode. So we're recording on Thursday. We're the day before Valentine's Day here. And yeah, I watched it this morning. You watch it like first thing in the morning too, right?
Yeah, I get up at like right before. Well, actually right now before I start cardio.
Okay. And
so 7 o'clock, I'm up.
Cool.
Watching it.
Seven. You wake up at 7?
Well, I get out of bed at 7. I tried to go to bed early last night.
That's late.
Yeah. Tried to go to bed early, but couldn't go to sleep. So
I'm up at like 5:30. I go to bed at like 1.
You're weird.
I'm weird. Picard has been really, really good. Really good. It is a wonderful looking show.
Oh, the visuals are spectacular.
I love the new ship. The acting has been really good. The writing has been fantastic. And the use of Romulans.
That is right. This so far, it's almost been more of a Romulan, almost a breakdown of the Romulan culture,
right,
more than anything else, which is fascinating to me.
So I think the neat thing is they are dealing with the fallout of the event that created the Kelvin timeline. The destruction of Romulus.
Right.
And so there was the countdown to Star Trek in 2009, the comic, that was Picard and LaForge and Spock figuring out a way to try and save Romulus from, you know, getting eaten by the exploding star. They failed. Yeah. And so the interesting thing, and by the way, spoilers.
Right.
So the interesting thing, and we're going to spoil the shit out of Lock and Key as well, just heads up. There's no way I can talk about that without spoiling it. And so the interesting thing is where the galaxy is now with Picard, because he's at odds with the Federation because he tried to save the Romulan people, and there were people from there were planets from the Federation who were like, if you let the Romulans in or help them, we're donezo.
Right. And it was also, and what they still could have done something, but it was the whole attack on Mars, which I'm still fascinated to see.
Jonathan Archer is spinning in his grave right now.
Right. What's what's going to come about with that?
So, okay. The whole idea of the show, it's focused around the memory of Data. Not like the physical memory of Vader, but the actual memory of Data.
And his heritage.
And his heritage. Yes. And he apparently maybe had two daughters, which is very, very interesting what they're doing here. They killed one in the first episode.
Which I was not expecting.
Did not expect that one bit. And then there's another one who is on the Romulan artifact, which is a decommissioned Borg cube.
Which, just talk about adding another layer of intrigue,
right?
Is this Borg cube got severed by the collective, and I don't believe they still understand, and that's part of the thing we're working through is why we have Hugh as basically the executive director of the operations here. So Hugh, a Borg we haven't seen since what, season 7 of Next Generation. With Descent Part 2, I believe that's what it was. So, I mean, it just everything about this show so far, at least. And again, because this is the halfway point, because I believe there's only
eight or nine. Yeah. I can't remember. It's episode 4.
So we're close. Pretty much the halfway point. And right now.
And I like where we're at the halfway point.
Right.
They're not going too fast. They're not dragging it out. The kid we met today, the Romulan kid with the badass sword skills.
Yeah. Elnor.
Elnor. Elrod, he's from Rivendell, and he's got the pointy ears, and he's an elf, and so
pretty much
he makes Legolas look like a little bitch
in melee combat.
He chopped that dude's head clean off.
I mean, I hope, and I'm pretty certain we will, but that we'll see more of what he can do.
Sure,
because that was so fast. Yeah. You didn't even get a chance to appreciate it.
Of course, it's just like a Romulan to bring a sword to a disruptor fight.
I like that guy. It's like, this won't matter with a disruptor.
Right. They got beamed out just in time. I really like this cast.
And to me right now, the most interesting character for me is Rios.
Mm-hmm.
I understand there's a little bit of tropishness to his little swashbuckling mystery.
He's the pirate.
Right. However,
and him and Agnes are totally gonna,
Oh yeah,
they're going to do it.
Although her comment today about the last person that would read physical books.
Well, that's exactly it.
Daddy issues.
Yeah, she's got daddy issues, and he's a walking daddy issue.
But how his holograms are basically him,
right?
Just different. I don't know if it's just it's different versions of his personality. Which there's a story there, especially when they were talking about his ship, Ibn Majin or something like that doesn't exist anymore on the records. Like when I was talking about it, I reviewed it today. That was one of the things. Like, hey, if they want to give us a mini series, and a mini series with him, I am all in.
Oh hell yeah! They're talking about there's going to be Trek on year round now.
Oh, that's
so
that's,
like lots of spinoffs and things like that. Like after this, we get the I don't remember if we get the next season of Discovery or the Section 31 with Michelle Yeoh. I don't remember how they're doing that, but. This is interesting. So 7 of 9 finally showed up.
Finally.
At the very end. Right. So that was really interesting. The whole Romulan thing though, like that's the fun part of this show, right?
Right.
They're sending Black Ops teams to Earth.
and we have Peyton List.
Yep.
Her relationship with her brother is really
It's very weird. Cersei Lannister.
Yes.
So let's pour one out for the Tomorrow People while we're talking about Peyton List. Show.
I love that
Gone
show,
too soon. Yeah, it's really interesting. I like how, you know, she keeps altering her appearance to Romulan versus human.
Right.
Admiral Yeo or Commodore Yeo being, I'm going to guess there's some sort of mind control or thing going on there. Like, I don't think she's like full on, you know, bad guy.
Right.
Like, unagainst her will.
My ideal outcome is like we get to see something where kind of like Thanos in, well, that's debatable because I was going to say sometimes you look around and you're like, well, Thanos. But anyway, we're kind of like Thanos where even if you don't agree, you understand. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that they do that and don't fall prey to, you know, just the, oh, yeah, this is a bad Admiral Commodore or whatever, or mind control. I want something more of depth.
Well, but you can't have a Star Trek series without the evil Admiral. You just can't.
Right. Like, that is true.
You can't. Like, there's got to be that person near the top of the food chain who is just awful and mean and evil.
That is a staple of Trek. So,
which is fine. I mean, you know, there's the Tal Shiar that they're bringing back into play. Picard's greenskeeper and butler, essentially.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what they, like, how to...
I thought they were Vulcan at first, and then I, like, took a look at him. I was like, oh, whoa, he's got house Romulans. Like, if he gives them a sock, are they free? You know, sort of thing.
But I like them. And they're damn, great. Watching they so them funny. Last week.
Yeah.
Pretty, oh, when they fought? When they saved his ass?
Yep.
That was... I just love this, you kind of like this, putting the like the whole Romulan culture under a microscope, and it's just interesting how the Romulans were such a powerful, I won't call them noble necessarily, race, and they've fallen so far because, and again, this is not something of their own making. This is not like, you know, the Undiscovered Country where Praxis blew up.
Right.
This is out of their hands. And, you know, like in this one,
they lost both planets that housed, you know, the Romulan.
And we haven't got numbers yet on how many they saved before, you know.
I mean, they said there were 900 million, which seems small. Like, there weren't even a billion people.
Yeah, that's kind
of
small.
I would have thought there were billions of Romulans.
Right. Especially two planets.
Well, I mean,
one planet is. But,
yeah. It's really good. I really like it. Like, it got me to watch Discovery.
Right.
And you know, you've been on a few times, but like for the last 2 years, I don't want to watch it. It's in a time, it's taking, like, I didn't like the time frame it took place in. And then spoiler alert, it ends the second season giving me exactly what I've been hoping for.
Right.
Star Trek way in the future, like almost 1,000 years. That's what I want.
Which, and again, I started Discovery when it first came out. Right. Like, I watched it. I took the trial and I watched maybe the first half of season one and lost interest. Not because it was bad, but because other things were on and I didn't want to pay for the membership, CBS All Access.
Sure.
But, you know, I got back into it before. It was actually because Picard, I said, you know what? Let me ramp up my Star Trek watching.
Yeah.
And I mean, I really enjoyed Discovery. There are certain things I, you know, obviously, again, because it's a longer series, so there's things like, I'm not sure if that worked. But overall, I mean, Anson Mount as Christopher Pike,
really loved him. Yep.
Much better than he was as Black Bolt, if we're going to.
Yeah.
You know, we probably shouldn't go there.
I want to see him as Professor X.
I've never thought about that.
Shave his head, stick him in a wheelchair.
That's a glorious head of hair, though.
Yeah, it's all right. It's glorious enough to grow back. Or you know else who would be a good Professor X? Tim Oliphant.
Okay.
Anyway.
He's had his shaved.
He's super handsome, though, so like it's almost too much. But because both of those guys, depending on who they cast as Jean Grey, are old enough where like the creepy like admiration that he had for. Anyway, sorry. I just say that because like I was reading a thing where they were talking about Patrick Stewart coming back. I almost called him Jean-Luc Picard. Patrick Stewart, if they bring the X-Men into the MCU, he might reprise the role of Professor X. And it's like, please don't. Please let us start fresh.
Yeah, I love him so much. I love McAvoy too.
I'll be honest, like, Patrick Stewart has been like aging very gracefully, but he's starting to show his age.
He's really starting.
Like, the way, like, just kind of the walking and things like that. And I know he's acting, like, some of that's being played up because he's a very fit man. But it's really quite funny to watch. You brought up Mars. So the essentially androids, like, turned on or were hacked.
Right.
And destroyed and killed. Did they kill the whole planet?
They killed 92,000 people died.
There we go.
And Mars is still on fire because of the atmosphere and all that stuff. But yeah, they just shut down all synth programs, like disassembled them.
Yeah.
And I thought that was curious. That was very curious decision. And I think something's going to play out with the reasoning behind it, other than, mm-hmm. you know, the synths did this, because anyone with a brain has to know there was something nefarious going on.
Right.
So I don't know if they shut this down to cover it up or what.
I don't know. But we had the two synths with Data's daughters.
Soji.
Yeah. You know, which is really kind of cool to see. And, you know, when they killed Daj, I was like, holy crap. Like, what just happened?
Right. I was not expecting that at all.
And then they're like, oh, but there's another.
So, There is another.
Another there is. Anyway. How It Should Have Ended put out how Rise of Skywalker should have ended today.
I haven't watched it yet. I saw that it was out, but
classic. Yeah. So it's Isa Barone or Issa Barone. Barones, something like that. Brions. She's awesome.
Right.
She's really good. And like, she was like the badass who was confused, like the whole like Jason Bourne getting turned on thing.
That's the other thing. The fight choreography in this show is some of the best I've seen on like network and streaming lately. And Discovery was pretty good too.
I mean, it's no Daredevil, but yeah, it's really good.
Daredevil's like, it's almost been 2 years since Daredevil's last.
I know.
Jeez.
No, you're right. The fight choreography is really good, and you know, that stems to the actors and the way that they're outfitting the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not all in, like, they're in armor and things like that, but like, you can tell they can move in it, and
right.
So it doesn't look weird when they're doing spinny jump kicks and that sort of thing. You know. Yeah. Elnor, when he came in and, you know, he comes through and you know the thing R-Truth does when he comes off the rope and he spins and does the forearm?
Right.
Like, he did that but then kicked the guy after he'd cut that other dude's head off. But the head was still on the body, and like the classic old like Kurosawa samurai move. So that was really, really quite cool. I'm really interested about, like, Bruce Maddox.
Right.
I don't think Alison Pill's Agnes Girardi has, like, the best intentions.
She comes across as too lost and kind of, you know, not know. Yeah, like you said, naive.
Yeah.
So I could actually see where you're saying mm-hmm. that there's... That would be a nice little, you know, red herring or whatever. And then, like you said, 7 of 9. Not sure where her and Picard's relationship was.
Well, he owes her a ship now. So
that'll be interesting. And, I love Jerry Ryan. I was a fan of Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, not just for her, but, like, just Voyager.
I
just
like
the concept.
Voyager was so dumb. So. Let's talk about Michelle Hurd for a second as Raffi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a drug addict.
I always think
which we have not really had.
Right.
We haven't seen that. I like how she calls him JL.
Right.
Which is like a form of affection, and at the same time, like, you don't control me. Of course he can't, like, even on a covert mission, he can't take a guilt trip. You know?
Right.
Like, he can't not take a guilt trip. I thought was a great line. And, you know, she had helped him try to evacuate as many Romulans as possible. Yeah. And they ended up being able to place 250,000 on the planet that they're going to.
Right.
That then turned into this warrior monk cast
right.
of women, which was really cool to find. You know, everybody talks about inclusion and representation and things like that in entertainment in general.
Right.
And Star Trek has never not been fully inclusive.
My problem is not inclusion. It's getting up on the rafters and screaming about it. Star Trek has always...
But they don't. They well, just
that's
do
what,
it.
Well, that's, right? what, that's my exact point. Star Trek has always been... And, you know, when people are like, well, Star Trek has always been about inclusion. Yes, it has. But guess what? They didn't... You know, they just let you see it. It's like when you have a message in a movie, let it play out. And we'll talk about this right. with Lock and Key. The big issue I had with that is, you know what? Treat your audience like they're intelligent.
I mean, Star Trek has always been like an idealized version of the future, right? Right. Like what we should strive towards. That's what Roddenberry right. wanted. And, you know, it makes sense. And it's really kind of cool. So, yeah. So it's coming out weekly. The next episode is February 20th. So a week from now. The last episode is 8 episodes, is March 10th or March 12th.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we're right there. So we just Absolute Candor, episode 4, directed by Jonathan Frakes, was the halfway point.
And there is, he's going to be on the show.
Yeah, dude, him Riker and Troy. And Troy are going to show up, I'm assuming, next episode.
Probably on Free Clout.
So Stardust City Rag is the next episode, episode 5, and that is also directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Kind of reminds me of they're going to Cantabite, but so I'm hoping not.
So Hanel? Cooper or Culpepper directed the first 3 episodes. Jonathan Frakes did this one, and then Maja Varillo, and then Douglas. It looks like Aronofsky, but that's not right. And then Maja Varillo does the last
episode. I'm not even trying to pronounce.
I don't even know who those people are, but other than Jonathan Frakes,
again, far, like we've said, it's been very good.
And I think. This being the first director or the first one where it's a different director than the first 3 episodes, it did not feel any different. The tone was very good. Mm-hmm. That's a shout out to, you know, the showrunners, Michael Chambon,
which is Avika
Goldman, James Duff, and Alex Kurtzman. You know, they're the main, and Patrick Stewart. So, but they're doing a great, great job with that continuity. Mm-hmm. Especially the continuity with Soji and Narek. Is that how you say his name?
Right.
Narek.
And that's the one thing I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things he did today was, and he was telling Narissa, is first I don't want her to activate and we'll have happened on Earth. You don't want that.
Right.
But he put doubt in her head while they're making out, kind of like throwing those little
the neg. He's negging her like the one playbook from the pickup artist or whatever.
Pretty much, because he said, I did.
You're really hot, but you're a machine.
It's like, I did research on that ship, and
right.
You know, it's public access for his passenger manifest. You weren't on there. So, but also, I'm kind of wondering. And I think this is where Narissa is, because she probably knows him. Yeah. And I think he's going to have just this battle between what he's feeling for Soji and his duties to the Zot Vash.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting. And it's probably going to pit him against his sister, who, again, they have their really interesting relationship.
Yeah, that was she. Like, I think it's one way, though. It's her, not him. He's not into it.
Yeah, I think she kind of gets off at, like, that control thing, because how she was choking him in this last episode where it's where she's saying, you know, say it, basically.
Right.
So, I want to see more of her character, not just because I love Peyton Lisp, just because I like how they're giving us just little bits of her right now.
Right.
And that's one of the things where we're talking about the show. They're not, it's not like a drip of information, but it's not like you're turning on the faucet. It's that good balance where it's like I said with Rios, you don't know enough about. I don't know enough. I want to know more about him,
right?
But every episode we get just a little bit more. Like when he brings the navigator out and the guy's just speaking Spanish,
right?
I love that. So I mean, this show has been very, very smartly put
together. And I like a lot of the theories coming out. Like, have you heard the theory that the Romulans invented the Borg?
No.
Yeah, where I don't, like, one, I don't give that one a lot of credence because, you know, the Enterprise was thrown into the Delta Quadrant.
Right.
Where none of the Alpha Quadrant space was there.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting if you think about it. And, like,
and why they are so against technology.
And if it's, like, an older version of the Romulans created it and then just sent that ship off and the AI became sentient and hive-minded.
Because I was looking at something because I was just thinking about Romulans and the Vulcans. And they splintered in what would have been, I think, 379 AD. I can't remember if it was 379 AD or BC, yeah. What it would be here on right. Earth. So if that was the case, I mean, there is a possibility of what you just said. That could have happened.
Right. So,
I haven't heard. I haven't really been listening to or reading theories about.
Well, because, and remember, the Borg always had trouble with Klingons and Romulans and Vulcans assimilating them because of, you know, the natures of those races. So it's really interesting. Like, and I'm excited to see where this goes.
One more point on that. This particular cube, I think, went on the fritz right after it assimilated Romda.
Yeah.
Like that
historian
or whatever, and those 25 Romulans. There is something about
I like how they call them the unnamed.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like they've been unnamed because they were Borg for a little bit, but, like, you know, they were highly damaged.
You know? As it would be.
Yeah.
And just that idea of bringing people out of their, and again, JL was Borg for we don't know how long, but a very short amount of time, and you saw how that traumatized him. Imagine that happening to you over,
yeah,
and then coming back from that. I know we probably won't get too much into that because there's more important things to talk about in the story,
yeah,
for this season. But just that idea of just that violation for all this time.
Right.
And you can't do anything about it. That's like one of the more horrible things you think. Like, we look at them as Borg, like they're really cool enemies. But just thinking of the individuals that were violated into becoming that is just, it's fascinating and terrifying.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
So, I mean, Picard's picked up for a second season already. Good. I don't know about season three, but, you know, it's definitely, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, all right. We got to talk about
Take a breath. If you can't say nothing nice, don't say anything at all.
Lock and Key aired on Netflix.
So that means I'm going to be talking the whole time.
Okay. So Lock and Key is one of my top three all-time favorite comics. You know, it's up there with Invincible, Saga, you know, Batman, you know, just in general, Spider-Man in general, X-Men. But as far as, like, a single cohesive, like, story, it is top two or three. Like, that, like I said, that one, Saga, Chew, like, are probably Invincible are up there. But, wow. Considering that Joe Hill was involved on the production side, as superficial as this show was shocking. Like, literally shocking.
And when you say involved, I don't think it was just, you know, a cursory, like, him here and there, him having that one, you know, special appearance as the EMT.
Right.
I think he was actually involved. Because, again, for those who are fans of the show or of the original book series, it was called Lovecraft, Massachusetts.
Yeah, like, so I don't mind that. It definitely took me out of the story immediately when they called it Matson. Because one, Matson, Massachusetts.
Matheson.
Just, or Matheson.
For Richard Matheson.
Sorry. Yeah. But, like, I don't care. Like, like, you know, it was just, it started on the wrong foot. So, like, you know, logistics, right? The Locke family is from San Francisco. They're not from Seattle in the comic. Doesn't matter. That didn't matter one way or the other. My biggest problem from the get-go is Nina was sober, because in the comic she doesn't get clean until the end, right? And in this way she falls off the wagon at the end. Tyler stopped Sam from, you know, killing Kinsey and Bodie and his mom, and you know, Nina got revenge on Sam, had a buddy with him who raped Nina, and she got revenge on him. So, like, I get why they didn't go gritty, as gritty as it was. But, you know, and you know, female characters have had to deal with this forever. They took away Tyler's agency right from the beginning, and the only thing he was a whiny little bitch who told Sam, like, if you kill your dad, kill my dad too. And he never got the pseudo redemption at the beginning of stopping Sam and saving his brother and sister. He just had to deal with that. And yeah, like, there's a lot. I mean, there's just a lot wrong with this show.
Okay, so let me go with the Tyler. Start on the Tyler thing.
Hold on. Sorry. Okay. I do not mean to interrupt you. It was way too Riverdale and way less Sabrina.
Okay, so I won't say I'm a fan of the book. I've read like first 12 or 15 issues, and I liked it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying
there's no accounting for taste. But yeah, sure.
So some of these things that you had coming in, I don't have those. However,
yeah,
with the Tyler thing, and again, that's one thing I
sent
I forgot.
You the panels right, of that.
One of the things, and I believe I told you this, but if not, here. So I didn't mind. I actually kind of like that initial for the first couple episodes of guilt that Tyler had for,
and he always had the guilt in the comics.
And it makes sense.
Yeah.
However, midway through, it just up almost like it up and disappears for like three episodes, and you know, he's living his life and everything, and then for whatever reason he just thinks, you know, with Jackie, his, you know, who again, she was basically not, I won't say useless, because I actually liked the actress who played her, but like the secondary characters were even less than secondary characters for the most part, and that was a problem I had. With Tyler, again, it went from him having all this guilt, which is understandable.
Right.
Absolutely understandable for him. Then he does a 180 and he's okay with it. Mm-hmm. And then for whatever reason, then there's no catalyst for him going back.
Right.
And so that was one of my big issues with his arc in general.
Like when he's locked out of the door, right?
Right.
I get what they're going for. Locked out, you know, there's no key that could get him in. Blech. You know, they're like Tyler is a great character in the book. He's four dimensional. He grows throughout the book. He goes from a struggling teen who's lost his dad, thinking he was responsible for it, with the only redeeming thing is that he saved his brother and sister, and then thinking, am I violent? Like, am I bad like Sam?
And that's never touched on.
Never. Because he didn't have that. And because Nina stopped him with a hammer.
And the violent thing, again, that kind of played into the guilt just a little bit, but not enough.
Like, I did not need to see Tyler beat his face in with a brick.
No.
Right? Because that's what he does in the comic, and Sam's all scarred up. You know, Sam was a waste of a character.
Absolutely a waste of a character.
He's very much a presence that's felt the entire time, because you know he's alive and you know he's in jail. And then once Lucas Dodge, you know, starts trying to recruit him, it's really, really interesting. I think I told you so Dodge was the other big problem I had. The girl that they had playing her is like the homeless woman's Erica Sierra from Eureka and Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
But when she went to visit Aaron Voss, like, even though Aaron had, you know, again, in the comic they didn't even in the show they didn't even talk about what Lucas had done to her.
They just kind of left that out.
Like, she would have never recognized who that person was.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is in the comic, Lucas comes back to Ellie once he gets out of the well, and he's his teenage self with the demon inside him, whatever. Right. But he goes right back to his school because he is so cocky that even though there's pictures of him being a championship fencer and part of this very popular group and in a play, that he walks the halls like, yeah. Yeah, I'm that. And having it be her, and you know, her and Lucas, or her, not her and Lucas, her and Tyler, you know, it was Dodge and Kinsey in the comic, and the love triangle was between Kinsey and Scott. And I get it, like, Lucas is the little kid from middle school, This Is My Life show. What was his name? Griffin. Sorry, or Gabe. Sorry, played by Griffin Gluck, who is really kind of a good actor. I enjoy him in a lot of things. But they overcomplicated that. And it's like, the kid that they had as Lucas would have fit in great with that aesthetic of people. Right. And it would have been a much better triangle between Scott and Kenzie rather than Gabe and Scott and Kenzie. And then Dodge and Lucas and Dodge and Bodie, you know?
Right.
Because again, she made these weird faces that just made me like Pennywise. Pennywise is not terrifying. Pennywise is hilarious in the new It movies. The little dancing, it's like you just want to pat him on his head and be like, you're so cute. That's what I wanted to do to her. Like, she was at no point did I find her terrifying. At no point did I find her essentially like a mastermind, like she was supposed to be trying to gather all these keys.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem that I had with between the Ellie, Aaron, and Lucas, is they race swapped Ellie and Aaron. So in the comic, Ellie's white trash. She's just this white trash woman. She did not adopt Rufus. Rufus was
her kid,
her special needs kid, and she loved him more than anything. And I feel like there was not a real I never felt the motherly bond.
Not with at all.
Rufus there.
And Ellie.
And Ellie. And I think by picking the actress that they did to play Ellie really affected that. Not that she's a bad actress, but like she was an actress of color, and it was a role that they did not need to swap, because Aaron, who was black in the comics, like race was a big part of her thing. And like, you know, Lucas used that because she was in love with Randell, who I think is the other one that was miscast.
Yeah, you said that.
He is so, like, the guy is, like, so quote-unquote cool. And, like, he's laid back and he's got the, yeah, I'm just a guidance counselor. Life's going to be okay. You know what sucks? Family. You know, like, it's like, what the hell? Like, Randell was, like, this, he was overweight. Like, he looked like a high school guidance counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And they got, like, the biker version, you know, like, you know, I half expected him to walk out on his Harley like, I'm out of here, kids. Like, do you watch the Goldbergs?
No.
So Anthony Michael Hall was on the Goldbergs 2 weeks ago as the guidance counselor, and he had the motorcycle jacket on and he was cool. And then he was like, no, this was me in high school. And he showed a picture of the geek right from 16 Candles. And it's like, you know, like, that's not the guidance counselor, like, you know, and just it was too much. And he was way too suave and smooth. And there's no way Tyler would have hated his dad that much. They'd say, you know, do this.
Well, this is the thing with that. He absolutely could have. And I don't think he hated it. It was just that father and son where they were at that point where they butted heads.
So, again, in the comic, you get from page one the fact that they butt heads and that Randell has a different set of rules for Tyler than anyone else.
And
the
they kind of tried to, when they were talking
again,
about the story,
superficial, they glossed over.
And that's one, some of the issues I have with this. And the biggest issue was at the end. We'll get to that in a moment, but it's funny. You said I actually like Dodge more than I like the person that played Lucas. I don't know what it was about the Lucas character or the, it wasn't the actor. He was fine.
Yeah.
But just, and I don't know if it was because they did it so late in the game where, I mean, it was what, episode 7 or 8 that where they,
He didn't show up.
It was just like along the lines of what they did with Sam when they're trying to show, you know, his,
yes,
almost.
Sam shows up in episode 5.
Yeah. And they show in episode 7, they show Sam's backstory. Mm-hmm. I don't, by that time, I don't care. Like, I don't care.
It was like the last
it.
Season of Daredevil when we got the whole episode of Karen Page's backstory. We didn't need it.
Oh, okay.
This is a Netflix formula, right? They pick a random character to give a backstory episode to that's completely unnecessary.
One of the other things I loved about the show, but then they just kind of lost again. They lost that path was. Again, he's not a great actor, but the kid that plays Bodhi, there's like he has so much energy. And again, he was poor Georgie in it,
right? So funny enough, he's the only one that they kept from the Hulu pilot,
which is I haven't watched that yet.
Well, it hasn't been.
Oh, I thought you said it was online.
No, there was there was a pilot that Fox did
in 2010.
I saw that years ago, like a pirated copy, which I no longer have, unfortunately, or else I'd share it with you, or not. Anyway, so again, my biggest problem is they condensed 6 volumes of comics
into 10
episodes. When if you look at Welcome to Lovecraft, right? It should have been Welcome to Matheson. Should have been the first season. And, you know, Bodhi doesn't uncover the Anywhere Key until the very end of that book. Mm-hmm. Right. And then that's how the Echo gets out of the key house or out of the well house. And then Sam has already come back. Like Sam comes back really early and she throws him through the ghost door so that like she can frame him for everything.
Right.
Lucas, as that happens.
I was about to say certain things like what we're talking about, they work out in how, you know, like you said, in a surface level, superficial way. The problem is, and again, because I told you, well, I was probably like on episode 7 or 8, where even without having the background that you have of reading all the comics or reading all like the entire run, I could tell that there was something missing from it. Now, again, this is somebody like I said, I enjoyed it for what it was. It's not going to be on my top list of anything.
Like, I don't know if I would even watch the second season.
I'll definitely watch a second season of this. And in the hopes that it gets better because there, and again, it's one of those things that has a lot of potential. It was similar to October Faction, that again, another Netflix one where, and I never read the October Faction comic. So, but it's so much potential and you can see it. And it's just not sure. It doesn't have the, you know, that like when we're talking about Picard, how Picard has, you know, just this strong base. Like these two shows don't have a strong base.
Right. So, In the comic, they released a one shot that's called The Guide to Known Keys, right?
Okay.
It shows how the keys are made. It shows a bunch of the different keys, like in the stories of like how they were found, and you know, like the history of the keys, what room it was found in, who found it, what does it do.
Mm-hmm.
There are a ton of them, right? And obviously, like they find keys as they go. And there were just a few keys in the first couple books.
Mm-hmm.
The Omega Key does not show up until well into the story. Well into the story. The Mending Cabinet does not show up until well into the story. And the fact that they did it, like Tyler gets shot. And she, because the shadows are there and the police officer tries to shoot the shadow and it ends up shooting Tyler because obviously bullets are going to go right through a shadow. And she puts him in the mending closet and saves, like, you know, Nina does, because that's the only thing she knows, because, you know, she got drunk. She threw a plate on the ground, stuck it in there and locked it because she didn't want to look at it anymore. And the next morning she went down to like clean it up because she sobered up a little bit. And she's like, wait a second. And it was never that, oh, what just happened? Where am I? What's going on here? You know, she's like, something's fishy. You know,
well, she did that here. She did. She absolutely
the actress that they picked to play Nina is not a good actress. Like, do you remember her on Jericho?
No, I don't.
So she was Skeet Ultra's sister-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Green, the other Dr. Green. And when they killed her off, I remember, like, the fan base was like, woohoo! Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah, watching her play drunk was a little bit rough.
It's like, have you ever drank before? You yes. know, what's happening here?
So, and again, let's get to the biggest issue personally I had with the show. And again, I have a fresher pair of eyes.
I understand. I am not the casual fan. They wanted to go wide mainstream for this.
Mm-hmm.
I am a super fan. I'm glad it got made. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that I can go out and buy the keys again because they're making like there was a company that made the keys when the comic was going on.
Oh, okay.
And now they're making them again since it's a TV series. So
plenty of places to put them in here.
I mean, they're keys. They're right little. There. I mean, they're right there. There's a key pin set right on the bag. You know, I'm in for that. Trust me. The keys looked beautiful. Like,
oh, the keys were nice.
Okay. So I don't mean to interrupt. So before you get to that, I do want to say a couple good things before we get to the end, because then I really have nothing good to say. The cast of the kids, I thought, were great. Like, I liked all of them. Connor Jessup. He was my favorite character in Falling Skies. The actor, you know, as the middle kid in Falling Skies, who, you know, became half alien, half human.
I forgot that. Yeah, like when you said, that was him.
Like when I saw Connor as Tyler, I was like, yes. But the girl that played Kinsey was great. She was great as Kinsey. I don't think the writing staff, which is really sad to say, with Joe Hill on, understood who and what Kinsey was.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bodie was great. And the friend group was great. And the kid that played Scott, I really, really enjoyed. Because in the comic, he's like a British punk rock kid.
Yeah.
And I liked this version so much.
I really liked Scott. I did.
He was so endearing. He was so, you know, earnest about, like, just wanting to make a movie. That's really all he wanted to do. And, like, love Kinsey. That's it.
Yeah.
So.
And this was my problem when I was talking about Bodie earlier. Yeah. Is, you know, in the beginning, the first couple episodes, he was in there. And then there was, like, a four-episode arc where he was just in there for.
Right.
They would just throw him in there.
Yep.
He did nothing.
Nothing.
So.
He was just around.
Right.
So, but, you know, there's also a point where Bodie finds the keys, Tyler finds keys, and Kinsey finds keys.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of got that a little bit once.
Right.
And it was a key that was the plant key where they went and found Sean Ashmore. Aaron Ashmore's.
Yeah, I always get them confused.
Yeah. Memories.
Right.
You know. Again, though. Like, they did a really good job with the cast, I think, like what we talked about with Star Trek, with the diversity, right? It wasn't over the head. You know, Aaron Ashmore's character is gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't matter. But it's key to his story.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was when he was a little boy, he was the one who found the keys, like Bodie, which we never got.
Right.
And he used the identity key to turn himself into a little girl.
See, that's
right.
And that's
and that has nothing to do with being gay. Let's clear that up right now. But he was always interested in, he knew about his identity and like what it was. And then they took his memories from him,
mm-hmm.
like, because he saw the kids die and Lucas had the idea. And this was after he got a bit of the Black Door metal on him. Let's just take his memory so he forgets all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, at the core, he is who he is. But, yeah, I didn't feel like we got enough with him because he's...
Yeah, he was another one where it was just almost shoehorned in the sense of if they would have taken that character out, it would have nothing would have been effective.
Right. Right.
Nothing. So...
So, some notable keys that we didn't get to see. Okay? The giant key.
Which I know you've talked about.
Bodie finds the giant key, turns himself into a giant, and almost knocks the lighthouse over.
What lighthouse?
Anyway. The Hercules key gives Tyler super strength. He wears it to play hockey against the school of the kid he beat up in the parking lot who was like trying to hit on Kinsey. he uses that to play, you know, hockey and kick everybody's ass. The angel key, it's a harness with feathers that you gives you the ability to fly. There's the chain key. It controls like the locks to like lock a bunch of things up in the catacombs. Mm-hmm. The scroll key, personal favorite, not total favorite. The head key is my favorite key, mm-hmm. but the scroll key gave Bodhi the chance to have a squirrel army. Right. So yeah, there's all these, there's an animal key where you can turn into an animal. So when Bodhi uses the ghost key, he's able to roam around, but he also sees other ghosts and clashes with them. He also, you know, turns himself into a bird with the animal key and, you know, figures out what it's like to be a bird and makes friends with the birds who then later come to protect him. You know, like there's all of this really cool nuance to what the keys were, what the story was, that they just glossed over. In the show notes, I have a list of the keys that they had. Where is it? They had the anywhere key in the order that they used them, right? Okay. Which is not the same order as the book. Fine. So the anywhere key was the first one. The echo key, the ghost key, the head key, the shadow key, and then along with that, the crown. The mending cabinet key, the music box key, which Dodge has and uses it to have people hurt themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, not just like what they did to Eden in the cafeteria by making her just make a fool of herself. Like, he used it to have Tyler try and kill someone, you know, sort of a thing. You know, the matchstick key, which I do not remember the matchstick key. I think that is one specifically for the
book.
The show.
Or the show, I should say.
Yeah. The one from the book also, there was the time shift key, which allows them to go look back to the past. Mm-hmm. So they can go back and see like when the keys were created and like stuff happening on the Locke estate. All right. The identity key we talked about. The mirror key, another show only one that you know, was okay. Like
they only used it that to kind of what that was the one where they found like they mm-hmm. found and where Nina actually gets lost in.
Right.
So
yeah. And then there's the plant key. And then finally, the Omega key.
Yeah, the whole Omega key thing, it seems like something that would have been built over 3 seasons or something along those lines.
Well, yeah. So in the comic, Tyler wears a hat all the time. He wears an Oakland A's hat, right? Mm-hmm. He's a big Oakland A's fan. And it has a black fishing hook on it. Well, he doesn't know what it is. His dad gave him the fishing hook to wear on his hat because that was the thing they did when he was younger. They went fishing. And he always had it with him. Well, the fishing hook was the same metal as the keys. They just didn't know. And then later on, when they need to make a key, Tyler forges a key out of that.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, it's the Alpha key to battle the Omega key. And what happens is, you know, and we get a glimpse of that, right? So the door opens at the end, and Eden gets, you know, shot full of alien goo. That's what she said. And you know, so now there's two, right?
Right.
And in the comic, you know, essentially Dodge used the shadows to lead everyone down after prom, and he was going to turn the whole class into demons, like mm-hmm. basically let his friend open the doors and let his friends come through. That was his master plan to take over the world. Where because we didn't get any of the lead up to that, the stuff that happened in the cave was just, again, superficial,
right,
and glossed over.
So, with that, there are certain things that I actually didn't mind. I think they probably should have cut out a couple of keys and focus more on,
yeah,
maybe some of the keys, you know, definitely some of the keys on here, and maybe some of the keys that they haven't shown yet.
Well, a lot of the keys that they haven't shown yet, like the giant key, for example, right? Mm-hmm. It's one we didn't need to see yet. Like that was a key that you can wait until season 4, and it's a really fun way to open the season with Bodhi like,
right,
busting through the.
So my biggest issue for someone who, and again, when I say I enjoyed it, I, you know, it's not on the level of Picard or anything like that.
Sure.
It's definitely better than October Faction. Definitely, definitely better than something like V-Wars. We're not going to talk about that one. But it was at the end with the whole Gabe is Lucas slash Dodge thing.
Right.
It's not that reveal that bothered me, which I kind of start, like, certain things, I was like, what's going on with Gabe? But when they showed it, I was like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And then they screw it up by replaying every single scene that Gabe was in.
It's like, I'm so stupid, I don't remember Gabe's been in this show.
And I remember, and I was watching this, shaking my head, like, are you kidding me? You're showing me. I know what happened. I don't need to see this. That's maddening when shows treat their audience like they're stupid.
Yeah, we dumb.
That's as good of a way to just take me out of a show as any.
I don't feel like it ended on an especially good note. Like it or let me rephrase that. It did not end on an especially high note.
No, it didn't. So, and again, that, like, I really enjoyed the first three episodes, but then from there it was like really up and down for me. Mm-hmm. There were a couple good. Again, I love Kinsey. I really like Tyler for the most part, despite them not seeming to know
the
what
kind
to
of
do
character
with
assassination from the comic book.
I love Bodhi. Nina wasn't a fan of, and then Admiral Soder comes in. Where, in case you know, that's like the detective.
Yep,
it's like, okay, that's.
So, but that detective is in the comic, but again, does not show up until Sam, and then he becomes very protective of the family, and it's not like, oh, I'm also in AA,
and,
you know?
And that's the thing. The way he came in, it was like just...
It was jarring. It was like tossed over the fence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I thought it was just, especially, it was more the second, his second and third appearance that bothered me other than the first one.
Yeah.
If they wanted to introduce him, like, hey, just have a bit part here, and then next season or whatever he comes in,
or you do it where he comes, like, when they find Sam, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he came to them and said, hey, by the way, Sam Lesser escaped. It wasn't just a random phone call that she could hide from the kids. They all knew he escaped.
Mm-hmm.
So it added
tension.
It added a level of fear. So like I said, so Kinsey, after Sam comes back, takes out her fear and her sadness because she cries all the time. And it's not a big, like, manifestation demon. They're tiny. And, like, you know, like, they look like her. They look like a crying, like, Wednesday Addams version of her. And, like, you know, kind of the big monster version that we got. And she puts them in a mason jar, right? And she sticks them under her bed or in a drawer and forgets about them. And then at some point, she goes back and, sorrow had cried so much it filled the mason jar with tears and killed both of them, right? But you can never kill your fear and your sorrow.
Right.
So, you know, but she took them out of her head.
See, there's two things on that. I kind of like the whole demon type thing, but the way she took, the reasoning she used to take it out, what you just said, because of Sam escaping, makes so much more sense.
Because Sam came back and she was afraid again.
So much more
sense. And she didn't ever want to be afraid again.
That makes so much more sense.
She was tired of crying. She was tired of missing her dad. She was tired of, you know, people around her dying and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's like I said, superficial. I know that I've said that a lot. So take a drink. I almost don't want them to do a season two. I want to wait 5 years and have somebody else take a stab at it.
It's one of those shows where, and again, I don't know if it's because it's not necessarily optimistic. I'm hopeful. I guess that's how I look at it, where I see something like this and you see the potential and you're just, but the problem with that is the same creative staff going to be there.
Right.
If the same people that kind of flubbed on some things in the first place, this is not like a show that, like, you know, a lot of shows in their first season has the bumps, but this is a show that actually has history.
Right.
So it shouldn't have the same bumps as a show like Supernatural that, for example, that comes out of, or Buffy the Vampire Slayer that doesn't have, you know, original material that they're working with necessarily.
Right.
you should be able to hit the ground running is basically what I'm trying to say on a show like this.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. You know, Buffy was not great out of the gate.
Buffy, if I would have watched season one of Buffy, I never would have watched
like
that
the
show.
The Office was not great out of the gate. Parks and Rec was a little better in season one, mm-hmm. not great out of the gate.
Right.
You know, you look at a show like The Good Place, great mm-hmm. from the start.
Right.
You know, there's a bunch. Like It's Always Sunny was not like you knew something was special about this first six mm-hmm. episodes if It's Always Sunny. But like
I love
the
first season of Blacklist, for example.
Yeah, Blacklist was great out
great
of the
first
gate.
Season.
What's the other one with the dude from 300 Rise of the
Blind
Empire?
Spot.
Blind Spot.
Yes.
Had an awesome first season.
Yep.
And then it fell apart. Alias, amazing first season. Mm-hmm. And then it had a great like second half of its run. 24 was not a great first season, but it proved a concept.
The concept was so incredible.
And then the second and third seasons were amazing.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. Like, this is stumbled.
Definitely stumbled.
Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Stumbled at the beginning.
Right.
Righted itself very quickly. Very, very quickly. So, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. I want it to be good. I went into this. I didn't watch any previews,
mm-hmm.
right? I just had what I had from my fandom of the comic. And I wanted it. I didn't want it to be panel and verse, right? They have to change things. And it did not need to be gory like the comic.
Right. And I think what you just said right there, a lot of times when we say, and again, I'm a comic guy with, you know, Marvel and
yeah.
stuff like that. But when we say, this was what it was like in the comic. That doesn't mean we need a rehash of the comic. Or
no.
with books, the same way. I don't want a scene-by-scene play out of every single thing that happened
so
in
like,
the book.
We talk about The Expanse all the time.
Right.
Right.
Like, perfect example.
I love the changes they've made between the books and the show on The Expanse.
That's actually a perfect example.
And
yeah.
I think it works so well. Like, this past season was 8 episodes. It was one of the longer books. But the changes they made worked really well with the flow. They were able to foreshadow things for upcoming seasons that the book did not do. And it strengthened a character dynamic that season 2, 3, beginning of 3 tried to break between Naomi and Holden.
Okay,
right.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like, which never happened in the book. They were always 100% committed to each other. And they, like, even when, you know, she's like, oh, well, I did this bad thing, which I'm not spoiling anything about The Expanse. Everyone should read and watch all of that.
Absolutely.
You know, I did this bad thing in the show. He's like, get the fuck off my ship. And in the books, he's like, so I love you, you know, and
I actually like his reaction more. It's more Holden to me in the show right. because it's just like he just has to process it. And again, we're not spoiling, but he comes just think about somebody you care about does something you don't like. It's not going to necessarily make you hate them.
Right.
And that's what he says. He's like, I'm always going to hate what you did.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you're not hurt.
Right.
So.
And like Avasarala is such a different character between the book and the show, right? And she had the greatest line in the history of television in season 4.
Is that when a guy's like, "What are you like? Why are you asking her these questions?"
No, when she said, "It's been fucked enough. Keep your cock out of it."
Oh,
so all right. On that note, we out. No, yeah, no. We'll be back next week. I don't know if you're back next week or not, but you'll be back soon. You can find us online at infamouspodcast.com. Head over to iTunes, like, review, stars. You know the drill. We're on Spotify. We're on Stitcher. We're pretty much, you know, wherever. I like to use the Overcast podcast app personally.
I haven't used that before.
Yeah.
Is that on Android?
Yeah. We have a Patreon page. Check that one out. Some of the tiers just changed. So there's only 2 tiers now. And
when you said tears, I just immediately thought
I know,
about Kinsey.
Gonna cry.
No, you're talking about
you
Kinsey
your
and
sorrow. I get it. So, but yeah. So yeah, new episodes every Sunday. You can find Daryl writing at sciencefiction.com. You can find him on Twitter. What's your Twitter?
I don't do
days?
Twitter.
Oh no, you can find him on Instagram.
Twitter is a hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah, well,
so
I still love it. What's your Instagram?
us, DJasper07.
That's right. And, you know, I'm at Brian Tudor on everything, so really easy to find. And the show's at Infamous Podcast, or just at Infamous Podcast on everything. So, yeah, thanks for listening.
See you later.
Bye.